Blog Talk Radio.
Tell my baby, make it hot. Ride the cock till you hit the spot. Tell my baby, make it hot.
Doing it doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo,
and welcome to a belated Naked Summer's Eye Contact Radio Hour.
Yeah, I had all kinds of computer stuff, yeah.
Well, yeah, it was just, I know all the archivers were thrilled because they don't have to go endure the wait time, but. All you loyal listeners out there, I'm glad you found something to do for that minute and a half. Maybe watched Mr. Burrow in Philadelphia lace a double over the left fielder's head.
Mm-hmm.
As the Mets toil in their demonic little visit to Philadelphia, which is an oxymoron in and of itself, to go to Philadelphia for anything else but a demonic situation is on your way to where? I mean,
I don't know. Anne Marie and I had fun when we went.
I don't care.
We were going to bring you back some Phillies memorabilia.
I have no use for that entire city. I hate Ben Franklin right now.
Well, nah, come on. He was good on the John Adams show.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Wow. So I hear Chelsea's ripping it up there in the Democratic thing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, right, let me just flip over and see if she's still talking.
I couldn't take too much more.
Not as much as her cockatoo mother last night.
Cockatoo. She does kind of remind me of Fred. Remember Fred the screaming cockatoo? Ugh.
Oh, we got Clinton up there now.
I'll get
a little bit of this for us here.
Must you?
I can't watch Ryan Howard.
Thank you. Please stop. Sit down. Please sit. You know, I love this.
That's enough.
Of course he does.
Please sit. I love this.
God.
You know, I just hope next time there's two conventions, one for the Clintons and one for the rest of the party. Because
that'd be nice.
I've never – they are the new Kennedys. They have claimed this party, you know – for their own.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I really think that you got to go a lot more radical when it comes to these little pep rallies.
Well, maybe you should have went and spoke.
I would have had a whole different outlay. I mean, I would have had, well, you know.
What would you have done?
We were talking about it today, actually. Me and fellow radical, Eco Monteferi. Actually, wouldn't you play his clip so people can get a sense of what an Eco thinks like?
All right, hold on. Must get back to the computer. Okay, I think I put it, here it is.
All right, then.
Hey, Mark, it's me. I'm down here in the parking lot. I guess it's about 1:30. I guess you're not coming. I guess I screwed up, so I guess I'll talk to you during the week. Give me a ring at my house and stuff. I got to start putting the stuff on the calendar. Oh, my God, look at that ad.
There you go. That's the brain of an Eco in action right there. So we were saying, you know, if we were going to do the convention, we would do it a lot more over the top, and we'd have, you know, like Lewis Black be the leading commentator. And
That would be great.
Yeah, and you'd have people from, like, Ohio and Florida up there basically talking about their votes being suppressed the last two elections. And you'd just have, like, a list of Bush lies going by on a scroll all the time, you know. Every time there was a break, there'd be, like, some war veteran's mother talking about how their kid was basically thrown into a meat grinder. Yeah, just... And maybe every break you'd have Neil Young singing, you know, let's impeach the president for lying. Just, like, make it into a raw, like, just a complete cauldron of crap for the Democrats. But they don't do it. They come out all soft shoe and change and uniting the party. And
yeah, it's boring.
And really, and next week, by the way, at the Republican convention, we'll be talking in the middle of that one next week. You'll see the complete different strategy when the Republicans go radical onto on everybody, and it'll be like a military exercise.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'll exhume Patton and MacArthur to swear in McCain. You know.
Jeez.
And the Phillies are staging a coup in Philadelphia of their own. Two out, nobody on, and Shane beat your team. I was up. He'll hit a 65-foot cue shot here that the Mets will need a fork to pick up.
Brother.
See, this is where Santana gets me mad. This is the Philo in action, okay? It's the sixth inning, and, you know, it's dark in Philadelphia, and all the Philos are yawning, their little heads. And he's straining to get these guys out this time. This is the part of their lineup. But it's a 3-2 game. You need him to shut these guys down and keep it a one-run game, and he won't. It'll be 4-2 in a second.
Mm-hmm.
Ground ball foul. And so, you know, like, whether you're watching sports or politics right now as you multitask during the live portion of our show, the archivists can do what they want. You get the feeling like you get a lot of stimuli during the day that kind of takes you toward or away from what's called your themata. I was sifting through my Noodle Coach book when I was looking for something else before. And in the Noodle Coach, it talks about this thing called the themata, which is it's a research term. It comes from the literary sciences. And basically, everybody's personality has sort of a cowlick that will allow it to behave towards its familiar sort of theme, as it were. And so that's why you gravitate towards certain experiences. Given the same raw material, you'll create that experience. And this is what the primary domain does in terms of your orientation towards the world. And that's why when you know what your orientation is, we're just talking about ecos, and that's the emotional guys, and like me, Modafferi, and Clinton. And,
yeah, we're not emotional.
And you,
not
of
at
course.
All.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that you're going to have variety, you're going to have a lot of peaks and valleys, you're going to have a lot of variability in terms of dynamics and things like that, and you're not going to really have a lot of stillness in that environment because emotions are, you know, sort of a percolator. And then when you have the bonding experience of the Philo, you're looking for something to stabilize that vulnerability you have, that weakness. So right now, Santana's relying on his defense and the ump and not his mighty left arm. Anto, you big wussy! A swing and a miss, and he strikes out the Anto Vicarino. Victorino, a loserino. We're back to the bench. Yeah, pain in the ass. All right, then. So, as you understand these domains the way they evolve, you have all four of them, and you have all four perspectives. So any experience you have, you could take it one of four ways. You could bond with it and say, I relate to it. It's totally me. You know, be one of the sheeple, and that's what the Philos do. And that's, by the way, that's almost 70% of the listening ears. So it's not like it's an unpopular thing to do. It's actually a good survival thing for species to do. Species tend to think in group first and individual second. Kind of keeps the tribe happy. Then you have the leaders and the alpha males and things like that say, over here now. And a certain portion of the Philos will follow them. And that's how you know how strong an Anto is. It's not that they go Anto. It's who goes Anto with them. That's why Hillary never fails to mention the 18 million voters and the something of the pantsuit last night,
mm-hmm.
which made me want to hurl things I hadn't even eaten. I hadn't even thought about eating. But that's the whole point. Antos are only as good as their followers, and that's why the difference between a visionary and a leader is the visionary is not looking over his shoulder. The leader is making sure someone's following them. And that is only 11% of the population, or is it 12? No, it's 12. Get that 1%. I'll tell the Antos they're less than that.
Mm.
And then you got us. Poor little ecos, 11% of the population that emotionally are able to get into people's vibe and use that strategy to deal with things, and that's important too. And the last but not least of the exos, the kind of the rack and pinion steering of the somatic perspective, and their mindset is that everything that's happening now can be done better. So they're in the troubleshooting mode, they're sort of in the R&D mode, and they're the structural aspect of things. So they're looking at things systemically. They're saying, like, how can what's happening here be improved the next time? They're almost the engineers on the site. They're not taking the direct experience like we're getting in the now. They're looking at the past and the future and using the now sort of as the pivot point. So you got any one of us can take any one of those four perspectives at any given time, but we all have a bias. And
mm-hmm.
discovering that bias is the purpose of our shoe.
That's right.
One and two to the rat bastard Worth. Okay. So, let's see what we've got going on here. Are we ready for interview time?
I believe we are.
All right, then.
until I cue up the horn?
You should
horn?
Find the horn. Find the horn.
I've got the horn. You ready?
Yes. Okay, so joining us now from an undisclosed location in the island of Manhattan, Mary Abrams from Moving Body Resources, DetCam. Good evening and welcome to Naked Summer's Eye Contact.
Thank
Radio
you.
Hour.
Hey, Mary,
hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thanks.
We're all doing better because they just popped out the second.
That's
all right. So, we're doing like five things at once here, Mary, so we're going to be able to multitask here tonight.
Okay.
Now, you've got a unique perspective because you actually joined up with the Somatypes and are part of that international group of practitioners that are trying to advance the concept of somatics and applying it to different things. So why don't you tell us first your background and how you stepped onto the somatic aircraft carrier that is the ISTMA.
Okay. Well, it starts with my particular sort of realm within what's called somatics, which is my interest in movement.
Okay.
And that started from a very young age. And I moved to New York about 20 years ago and to primarily be involved in dance. And it was through my professional activity in dance that one of my teachers, who was shifting into becoming a Rolfing practitioner, led me into this work called continuum movement, which is a form of somatic movement practice. And I've been working with continuum movement, which is breath and sound and movement work, that's primarily interested in inquiring into the human as a fluid system. And that then led me to looking at a greater field of what's called somatic movement in the world. And then a friend of mine asked me if I'd be interested in joining the board of directors of the International Somatic Movement Education and Therapy Association.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about 6 years ago that I started being active with what's called ISMETA for short.
And how does that organization work? Do they meet? Do they just kind of boogie in the wilderness together? Is there just you pay a lot of dues to get, like, networked together? How does that organization function?
Well, at its original inception, it was to service this field of professionals who are working with somatic movement to have a kind of professional accreditation and identity, because pretty much everybody was out there discovering their own training processes and then starting to work professionally without kind of anything to help say or acknowledge them. So originally it was just a professional registry.
Mm-hmm.
So there are educational requirements, there are professional standards that have to be met, there's a scope of practice and also ethical standards that everyone agrees to. So ISMETA originally and still does maintain a professional registry of individuals who meet all these requirements. In the 20 years of its existence, through various board members who have been active, particularly a woman named Dr. Martha Eddy, ISMETA has grown to also have member organizations and training programs that in different kinds of somatic movement work that if you graduate from one of these approved training programs, it's known that you already fulfill the requirements of the organization to be a professional member. And in this process, then, more networking has occurred between
wow.
members in different ways. And one of the goals of ISMETA is to also help begin to educate the general public in greater ways.
This is way more complicated than I thought. I'm going to go bang my head against the wall. What's the ethics involved in somatic education? That sounds like to be the farthest thing from my mind. We're dancing. We're feeling. We're experiencing. We're having a good time. Why is the party open?
I think that particular item mm-hmm. isn't so much one that I would say our community feels is necessary, because we understand, in a sense, the ethics of this particular kind of
Am I here? I don't know if I'm in. Hello, if anyone's out there, we got disconnected, and I think the server crashed. So I might be talking to myself. And let's see here. Okay, I don't know. Going to check and see. I'm going to ask somebody if they can hear us. Okay, interesting. Okay, well, okay, good. Then you can hear me, and I'm talking to myself. So if our guest is listening, could you please dial back in? I don't know if I'm going to get this stupid thing to work, though. Let me see if I can bring my switchboard back up. Uh-huh. Servers are down. Don't worry. We're trying to fix it. Well, that's not helping me, and I'm talking to myself here. All right, let's see. Hold on. Mary, are you back? Mary? No, of course not. All right. Wait, there she is.
Hey.
Are you back? Oh.
I had no idea what happened. I was talking and talking and talking.
Well, we heard a lot of it. The server crashed.
Okay.
At Blog Talk. Sorry about that. So you were saying?
Where did I leave off?
Oh, gosh. Mark had just asked you about, what was he saying? Yes, the ethics.
And do you remember what the last thing I said was?
No, I don't know because I got cut off too, so I'll just start there.
Okay. I was basically ethics comes up more in relationship to the greater world of professions, which pretty much every profession, especially when you're dealing with human beings in any kind of wellness activity, but most of them are in the healthcare field, you know, there's always some kind of code of ethics necessary. So, in a sense, we've developed a code of ethics to meet a more mainstream professional interest in ethics than really, I would say, our own need to develop that because, generally speaking, to my knowledge, it's never come up as an issue that people were being unethical in the profession.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah. And in a sense, part of that is part of the profession is as we develop a more whole and conscious awareness of the body and the whole thinking, feeling, creative spiritual body that really is an expression of our physical being, that develops more and more a sense of ethics as it is. One of the things that I'm involved in as a representative for ASMEDA is we belong to we're a member organization of a group called the Federation of Therapeutic Massage, Bodywork, and Somatic Practice Organizations.
Huh.
And now they have other member organizations. I think there's 9 of all together at this point in time. I won't go through the whole list, but the American Massage Therapy Association, the Rolf Institute, the Feldenkrais Guild of North America, the Traeger, U.S. Traeger Association, the American Organization of Bodywork Therapies of Asia, and the American Polarity Therapy Association. That's just a few of them. We all have representatives that are tracking different kinds of legislation happening state by state that can affect any of these different professions within the massage, bodywork, and somatic practice realms. And part of that, the need for that is because massage laws can be written in such a broad and general way that they affect anybody who does anything with touch and the body, and touch even in a minor way, because most, in the sense, somatic movement people are working with touch in a very, very it's not in the sense kind of touch to manipulate tissue so much as it is to help educate.
Huh.
Anybody hear me now?
Yes,
yeah. We hear you.
Hello, I'm back again.
Great.
Well, sorry about that little dip out there. I asked a question about ethics and I got the bad egg thing. I got dumped out of the Blog Talk. The karma of the Blog Talk radio, what can I tell you?
That's all right. Well, we got it also. Now we get
it. Let's shift the tone of this conversation because this meta is getting like an infomercial here. Nice organization. I still don't understand it. And at this point, I think I might need to read, like, you know, me and my attorney might need to read the fine tune of this thing. I understand what they're trying to do, but I got to tell you, we've been trying to pump this word Soma through the minds and the guts of the Blog Talk Radio universe for a little over a year and a half now. We're getting close to a year and a half.
Yeah.
And I would say if you went out, where are you guys in Manhattan? You did Midtown? What part of Manhattan are you guys in?
Well, is Meta itself...
No, you guys, you mind body
moving body resources.
Yeah,
I'm in mid, sort of lower midtown Manhattan, that area that's kind of midtown Chelsea, whatever.
Okay, good, fine. You got more of a shot where you are, but you go out there, you stop 10 people, and you say, "What's a Soma?" and see how many of them try to mug you, because I got a feeling that word is so enigmatic, no one understands what it is, that you would probably spend the better part of your professional life trying to explain it to the average sape walking around Manhattan. And then any of the other things, last week we got someone on from MyShrink.com who simply called it body-based psychology, and everyone understands it, or body psychology, body psychotherapy, I guess it was her broad term. And the thing is that what you're talking about is not that difficult to understand. We keep trying to say somatics is simpler than dividing everything up into physical and mental and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And even the spiritual stuff, you know, even the mindfulness practices that are involved with meditation and yoga and all that stuff, you don't have to divide anything up. All the soma has to deal with is the organism and the environment and being able to have the exchange, a little conversation. As Meta's trying to do it through movement practices, I think that's great, and education about that's great. A lot of times, though, people are just sort of saying, I don't need that. I don't need to do that. I have my this and I have my that. I have my exercise. I have a massage therapist. I have my practitioners. They do it for me. A lot of the somatic stuff that we talk about in our work, in universal somatics, since we're dealing with communication skills, has to deal with the fact that you must perform it to own it. It's a first-person authority. And so... since movement is something that is so sort of like it runs parallel to vitality, the more movement you have, the more vitality you have, the more control you have over that movement, then the more coherence you have in that vitality. How do you guys propose that in the next, say, generation, that somatics becomes part and parcel to things like public education or things like even adult education, so people are not wandering the wilderness unaware of what a soma is, that this becomes a kitchen table word? We'd like that.
Yeah.
Please enlighten us.
Well, I have to say, I don't know that I can speak totally for his meta at this moment. However, I can speak from my own experience as a somatic movement person, in that intellectual understanding of something is a very thin kind of knowing, and a person doesn't really understand something fully, like in a sense doesn't truly have knowledge until they have a fully felt sense experience of it. And you can't have a fully felt sense experience of something if you can't feel your body in a conscious and cognitive way. So I think ultimately we just have to keep planting the seeds for a value system that encourages this kind of conscious awareness, because it creates a healthier human being for the long run.
But I agree with you. We're on your side of the coin. We're on your side of the street even. We're handing out hot dogs on your side of the street. Our big issue is that most people, whether they're taking piano lessons or whether they're taking lessons to fly paper airplanes, they don't equate movement or physical behavior, any kind, whether it's dance or whether it's learning how to sheetrock their house, with somatics. They look at it as, I'm just moving here. And so how do you make the bridge, Charlie, to movement and therapy to this sort of outcome of more vitality, a better way to communicate, even longevity? And we talked about brain remodeling. We talked about lots of stuff on this show related to physiology that would get across the barrier where most people have put up a wall that says, unless I have a deficit, I don't need to practice any of this stuff. Unless I'm experiencing operating difficulties, I don't need to do any of this exercise-y stuff. because we've seen other movements like Brain Gym and some of the other ones we've had discussed on here, like even Dialectics, which is kind of a backwater one that gained some popularity that deals with emotional relationship with the physical body. There's so many modalities within somatics, and you guys are using your own resources there. How do you get the general public, who has no clue what this is, we're Martians to them, to say this is worthwhile not only to learn about or just be aware of, but actually to adopt and practice personally?
Well, I think it does come down to a certain level of it comes down to need. People aren't going to really reach out for something until there's a perceived need.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way I know how to do it is just to keep modeling it. As a human being, how I move through my life, how I talk to people, whoever they are, whether it's somebody I'm talking to on the phone or on the street, people who come to my classes, clients, people who are referred to me, the doctors that I meet, whether for myself, you know, the children that I come into contact with in different ways, you know, how I model myself as a living, you know, somatic being is really the way it starts to get communicated, because it's at that silent level where the resonance starts. And then people start to get interested. They start to feel and see that something's really alive here. There's something more going on than just kind of the in a sense, the mindless way that they're used to going about what they're doing. And that curiosity then starts to develop, in a sense, that kind of hunger for something else. And then usually slowly they start to try things out that maybe they wouldn't have tried out before.
Again, we had someone last week that said the same thing, that somatics is an experiential art, so it's difficult to take someone to the amusement park and describe the roller coaster and have them get the same effect of just getting on the damn thing. So the test drive part of this is really where we're, especially on the web, where in communicating our information to people, this is where we're saying, okay, unless you let us guide you through it and give you the experience directly, it's difficult for you to appreciate the benefits, because this is a physiological hit. This is a physical thing that happens within you that creates this awareness you're talking about. So how do you guys introduce people to your work from the outside? They're standing there with basically a neutral situation where they don't have a need for or a need against. They just knock on your door and say, what's going on in here? And how do you give them a test drive?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one way you can do is just to, if I'm meeting with somebody live and in person, I can begin to inquire into what they're noticing in their body and then how that begins to affect them when they start to bring some conscious awareness to actual sensation going on in their body. If you were working, let's say, via the medium of the internet and putting words out for people to read, you could begin to offer them questions as a way to inquire into their own experience and in a sense begin to start to track what's going on within themselves and mm-hmm. then begin to notice what effect that has on them, like whether they start to feel more at ease, mm-hmm. more resource, a flow of discomfort, but then more ease. You know, you don't really know what's going to start to show up when people actually start to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I think most people sort for symptoms. I mean, people sort for what's wrong rather than what's strong across the board. Yoga, for example, got really, really popular just by telling people to focus on their breath. They didn't have to learn how to do the asanas and stand on their head and kick themselves in the back of the head and be a rubber man. They simply said, be aware of your breath. And by doing that, people said, okay. And they said, well, yoga's related to meditation, related to spiritual, related to mindfulness. And all of a sudden, you know, a couple of people in Hollywood squatted in the lotus position, and away they went. Where will the somatics movement, the river to somatics, that right now is a trickling, babbling brook, maybe a stream with several puddles around it, because it seems to park itself a lot in psychology and park itself a lot in motor development and even in some cases, even some dance therapy kind of things. When will we get... In the somatics, I'm saying we now, in the somatics, in the union of somatics, when will it get its act together enough so that it can be perceived as something that is done outside of the therapeutic window, outside of even the educational window, where it's a natural form of engagement, where it's just simply, it's sort of an unwrapped fish. It doesn't have to be put into the context of all the other things that are out there. I just see it kind of getting almost kind of outshadowed by the modalities themselves sometimes. So somatics in general versus somatic modality in particular. I just see that the message gets sort of lost in translation because very much like other modalities, and we've dealt a lot in the what we call the woo, which is all these alternative things, the public can't make a distinction between someone that's doing polarity work and someone that's doing, say, Reiki. All they know is they're laying on a table and some person in a muumuu is putting their hands over their face.
I don't wear a muumuu.
I know. I'm wearing a smock of science. And they're basically doing something with their NRG. And so I don't understand how that, you know, with somatics, if the generic context is we're talking about being aware of your body, we're talking about this physical movement thing, we're talking about having more of an engaged experience, or they used to call it embodied cognition. How does that general message get past a culture that is completely separate in terms of what they think about physical and mental health? What's the bridge? They've tried spirituality, they've tried neuroscience, they've tried developmental, they've tried behavioral. They're running out of darts.
Well, I mean, I feel like ultimately it comes down to about we're a culture that's based primarily in shame about the body and shame about having a body in the first place.
Mm.
So therefore, we, in a sense, it's hard for us to even turn our interest toward the body because it instantly brings up shame, and then there's, you know, literally an internal collapse in the organism, confusion. It's like, how can I be interested in something I'm not supposed to be interested in? So there's a value change that has to happen culturally overall in order for, in a sense, this to hit the big time, the mainstream. And that value system could happen at any time. And even if it doesn't happen as a whole cultural phenomena, it's certainly continuing to happen bit by bit with many, many people. I think what somatic work can really offer is the continuing to plant the seeds for that the body actually, we don't have to live in shame about it just because that may have been a value system at one point in time and that may have served some purpose for human development at that time. That's, human development is an unfinished process. We're a species that hasn't finished its evolutionary development. And we don't know what we can become, but what we do know is we can't further develop ourselves or further evolve without some kind of conscious participation, more cognitive awareness of what's actually going on, and being able to sense and feel and actually participate with the, you know, the pulsing, vibrating, silent level process that's going on is a big piece in our greater development. And it's a big piece in developing at the affective level more healthy responses to the actual affect of shame. And when
this is new. I got to admit, I haven't heard anyone talk about this, and the psychologists love shame.
Well,
big hook for them.
Oh man!
Lots of drugs in the pharmacy in the over the counter aisle dealing with shame.
Yeah, there's a lot of drugs. Well, I don't
depression.
Know. I think they're helping to manage shame. I'm not so sure how much they're having to deal with shame.
We would say they're institutionalizing it and lobotomizing the user. So again, there's a double-edged sword with all this conscious awareness is that you wake up to the fact that you've been basically violated by your culture into giving up innate resources that would help you evolve and to make you kind of herd mentality, kind of like, you know, grab the elephant's tail in front of you and kind of keep toeing the line here.
Mm-hmm.
The radical edge of somatics, I don't know if you go as far back as like when Thomas Hanna was teaching and everybody was out west and est and, you know, walking around naked and doing all kinds of weird somatic stuff, getting in touch with their inner child and all that stuff in the 70s. But what it's evolved to now is almost kind of a Spock-like mentality. Everything's very nervy and very kind of almost dry. And the visceral part of this work where you're dealing with raw, untamed emotion, you know, all the stuff the psychologists used to do now has become more somatic therapy where you're dealing with, like, you know, the primal screaming and all the kind of getting a lot of emotions out. It seems like there's almost like a one way or the other here. We're completely, you know, howling at the moon, or we got the biofeedback buttons on, and everybody's beep, 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 very exact. Where large part of society functions with those two as the walls to push off. So what do you do in the middle of those two extremes where you're dealing with not so much, you know, the hard science approach and not so much the caveman approach where everybody's just going to, you know, bay at the moon, like I said, where we have an everyday awareness of somatics. Because in our work, we deal with entrainment. I don't know if that's a word that even hits the beach with you guys in your work, but it's a word that resonates with us because it's completely able to straddle both sides of the fence. You could deal with entrainment to just about anything because it's a rhythm thing, and that's really what somatics is about, is developing awareness of rhythms within rhythms. And we feel that, and this is maybe something you can agree or disagree with, that the easiest thing to help people gain awareness of this stuff through is through what entertains them. So if they're doing something that's playful, we had someone last week talking about emotional health, being able to enjoy playful moments, which I think I should write in a big banner and stick on the roof here, because that's something that people have outlawed. No play, no play. Not even any fun. Just work, work, do the work, do the inner work. Oh, God, all this work. And when you get to that point where you're looking at things from the gray in between those two extremes, we feel that in training people to what entertains them, deals with images that either give them more power, which you're talking about, or it gives them an appreciation of beauty, which is the nature approach, you know, back to the caveman. So how do you guys, in movement, when you're dealing with something that's dynamic, how do you get a message across that's so deeply embedded in the person's awareness that they might even be conscious of it? And even when they become conscious of it, they're going to attribute it more to something physical rather than something maybe metaphysical.
Well, I think one thing's important is to recognize that there are many ways to define movement. And so when I'm speaking of movement, I'm not talking about just gross motor gestures. I'm talking about also inner movement that's very micro within the body. So the whole sense of or definition of movement spans that whole scope of inner micro movement to macro movement of a broader gesture. And everything in between. So what in working with somatic movement, basically I'm encouraging people to have a greater awareness of all of those activities going on. And when I hear you describe, you know, the sense of play, and then in a sense in opposition to all the work that's also being sort of prescribed as the way to go, we're talking at an affect level, which is the biology and the flow of activity going on in the sort of the nervous system stimulation, or you could say that inner movement at the silent level of the human organism that's also motivating it toward anything. We're talking about the difference between the two positive affects, one which is interest, excitement, which is a focused kind of attention, and enjoyment, joy, which is a decrease of stimulation or a kind of opening of attention, a broadening of attention. So there's been a lot of emphasis in terms of development on focused attention or interest excitement and not enough balance with the enjoyment joy or more of that kind of playful aspects that you described. So ultimately we need a kind of more dynamic range of those two positive affects in a sense in support of the other less pleasurable affective flows that are going on biologically. So one of the things I feel is really key to helping people grow and in a sense develop more of a value system is helping them learn the language of affect and how affect is actually informing them in everything that they do, in a sense motivating their attention in different ways, and that's a biological phenomenon. It's not bound to the content of their lives, which is really, in a sense, how emotion develops on top of affect. Emotion, if you think of it, is the biology plus biography over time.
Wow.
Whereas affect is going on from the moment that we're born until we die biologically, and it's very fast in the organism. So the more we can start to tap into, in a sense, as you describe, those inner rhythms and the variations of those rhythms, we start to have a greater understanding of how we're actually flowing within our own experience. And so through movement, you can work with that on many levels. You can work with it on an inner awareness sensation movement level. You can work with it in a more expressive gross motor level. And the what's important about that is it sort of expands the details in the whole, you know, map of your body-brain experience.
That was great, but I have to share this with you right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's about time. Well, it's a good thing you're a New Yorker now, so you know what the heck's going on here with this
Mets
crazy
tied
mess.
The game. Yeah, I was listening to your entire thing, and I'm watching my boy Delgado up there, who's a philo. And you sound kind of philo to me. I had you pegged as an eco on the web, but you sound like you got a lot of philo signatures of you. And it, all it means is that you're more gross motor kinesthetic than fine motor kinesthetic, and you get a little clumsy late at night. You know, you might notice this is, if that's a good distinction. Ecos are clumsy all during the day. So I'm watching this guy in the mound here, who's the second inning pitching, right? And he happens to be a philo as well. So I'm going, this is philo here. So I'm saying, we got half a damn chance to tie this game because he's locked in, my guy. So I said, if he just goes to the opposite field and doesn't try to pull it, he might pop it out of the stadium because the wind's blowing out, you know, to the left. So you're talking about this awareness thing. I'm going, wow, if he just ecos just a little bit and he hits this little fly ball and lands in left field to tie the game. And if you were watching what you were saying, scrolling under the screen, he was applying everything he was saying down in Philadelphia just now. So it was a beautiful thing. I just wanted to get the applause to get the credit for that one.
Thank you.
You know, because that see, movement, when people think of movement therapy, they think I'm fixing something wrong with the way I move instead of enhancing your awareness of movement to become more fine and more efficient in your movement so that you communicate better with your environment, not just the people in your environment, but the world around you, because fine motor skills are usually refined to cognitive stuff like writing and things like that. But what he just did there was absolutely beautiful in the sense that he knew that if he tried to pull it, he's out. And he knew if he went against the grain and didn't try to force himself to do something, that he would gain an advantage over a guy who was trying to pitch to his weakness, and he popped it out of the stadium. And that takes a tremendous amount of self-control, because when you're feeling tense, which most people walk around with a lot of residual tension, you probably see them walking all over Manhattan, to get them to let their guard down, to let that defense down, to let the world in again and support them in making this change, you have to kind of let the vulnerability kind of find its way into your system so that you can release a lot of this tension. Then when you spring out, you have this almost like an afterburner, almost like a turbocharge, like an extra layer of energy that you didn't know was there because you've been pushing away that awareness your whole life because you've been taught to come from the head down and from the outside in. And what you're trying to get at here is that don't try to fight it. When people go to a party and they're dancing, okay, they've got a couple of drinks in them, their inhibitions are lowered, and they feel like they can get into the vibe of the music, and they don't feel as singled out and as self-conscious and as sort of like locked up and sort of frigid. And so like continuum, and I've seen continuum practice, it's a hot therapy, okay? It's not something that's static. And like, I don't know if in the city you're aware of something called Five Rhythms Dancing. You ever hear of that?
Yeah, I know of it. I've never done it myself personally.
Okay, well,
but I know what you're talking about.
You'd slide right into that room from what you're telling me. And basically they're dealing with energy. They're dealing with different vibrations of energy, different ways of expressing yourself through your physical body. It's primarily eco because it's sort of an emotional way to physically personify your emotions. And it gets you to understand that these things are not located in you. We try to talk about someone that tells me that something got them angry. I said, no, angry got you. Angry is a physiology. You step into that physiology in order to protect yourself, again, the power images, or because there's ugly in the room and you feel polarized to the ugly. People don't want to be around ugly, and they don't want to be around weakness, and that makes them polarized. And this is why the images are kind of guiding the behaviors. So what you're trying to suggest here, and I think you just kind of underscored it, is that in order for somatics to get traction, you've got to take what's obvious to the public and give them the subtle side of it, saying this is why this is so popular, this is why this is so attractive to you. And then on the other side, take what's subtle to them and obvious to us over here in Somaland, and make them understand that they can get this in any time, any way. They don't have to go through some type of trial or some type of, you know, like psychology always talks about, you know, we got to go back to your mother. You know, no one wants to go that deep to get something that's sitting on their front lawn. And I think what you're suggesting here is movement is the easiest and the most tangible way to get at this awareness without having to get in your head or without having to go into your past, and just letting your body express itself and communicate back to you like a feedback loop, so that the more you do it, just like the more you jump rope, the better you get a jumping rope, the more you use your body to communicate to yourself this way, the easier it gets to do that, and of course the easier it gets to pick up that awareness from other people. Is that kind of summarizing your way of doing this?
Yeah, and I'd like to highlight that it's actually the more information you have about your own well-being at any given moment in time, so then the more options or more resources and choices you have available to respond to every situation instead of responding by rote and unconscious habit over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, we're dealing with habit most of the time, and habit becomes part of closed identity. It becomes part of the addicted way of being that most people adopt before they're 30 years old. And after 30, the adult brain gets a little tougher to change. And do you by and large see a population of adults, or is it all over the map?
My population is primarily adults, I'd say between 30 and 70, with some on the other end, higher end, and every now and then some people in their 20s.
So it's sort of a somatic fight club you got going on over there.
Well, I think some of it has to do with that's a time in their life when they've been through their need to belong to the culture and to identify and prove themselves, and now they realize they've only got left whatever they've got left, and they better make the best choices possible or get more out of it as best as they can, because this is the time. And they've got the cognitive development to actually be able to pay attention in greater detail to their experience than they've ever had before.
And as we know in our work, I mean, this is one of those stats that you might want to slap up on the wall there from Wired Magazine. We could probably send you the link. After the age of 30, making lifestyle changes becomes a 90% odds against you, because the primary behaviors become locked in. And so people will try and try and try. And even when they have direct physical needs to make changes, it's difficult for them to make lasting changes in their behavior because they become so ingrained in the way that they survive. So somatics is always seems to be the last resort. All of Hannah's work in his early work in somatics was about getting people to have an awareness of the second half of their life to keep their vitality and their youthfulness as they get more aware and more ingrained in this social part of life. Because after 25, you know, and you get past that adolescent brain, your brain becomes much more socially oriented because, as you say, life becomes more complicated and there's other things going on, and you have to have a way to root yourself. And somatics is it's sort of a portable discipline. You don't have to have a meeting. You don't have to go to some crisis control center. You simply have to be aware of the things that allow you to function at your best. And I think you've done a great job of illustrating how people can get started with that. So, all right, so we're wrapping up here. So just give us, and we've talked about a lot of the misconceptions, but, you know, from the outside in, from someone walking down, you know, where you are there in the Chelsea area, and they notice your sign. Oh, my God, we're going to go take the lead now. Wow. This is beautiful. Another final just got a hit. This is like never happened with the moon this week. Exo. Anyway, the number one, I'm like on three different levels here. The number one misconception from the outside, from day one, does someone think you're running a dance studio, for example, as opposed to something that's a self-awareness type of place? What's the number one thing that blocks people from pouring in your door?
The number one thing that blocks you from pouring in my door is that the primary way that I'm doing the work that I'm doing is encouraging people and actually demanding that people be more personally responsible and self-reflective and self-reflexive in the process. So people who just want to be told what to do, when to do it, how to do it, and when to stop, they have to go somewhere else. But people who really want to be creative and discover and explore and truly participate in creating their own being and the environment that they're living in, that's what brings them in.
Okay. Well, hopefully we'll send them over to you some more. This is Let's get the website right. It's Moving Body Resources, right?
Yes.
.com? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Mary. Well, thanks for joining us here. Sorry for the glitches and itches here on the Blog Talk radio from hell. sometimes it goes that way, but hopefully people will take a look at our interview and take a look at your website and jump on the Soma train with you and boogie down to Manhattan. And you guys offer classes and you offer personal work as well, right?
Yep.
Okay. Well, we can check it out over there. And so thanks for joining us here on Naked Soma.
Thank you
very
much. It's been a pleasure.
Take care now.
Okay, take care.
Huh.
All righty then.
Interesting stuff there.
Yeah, I'm all over the place.
You know, never, never.
Oh, my Lord.
I
am busting out.
I don't know. Well, it's the eighth inning, so let's just keep your...
I'm not even going there. We have a situation right here now with Shinida's up, with two out in second and third here. We could just get a little bingle here, and I could breathe. Oh, it's a little bingle. It's going to drop her down. It's going to be two more runs for the loose Mets.
Oh, my.
Oh, the Phillies are collapsing. Ooh, we are doing it to them tonight. Oh, baby. And to this, I'd like to say to the Philly fans.
Good riddance, fuckface. So long, you fetus-faced windbag. Good luck managing a Denny's douchebag.
Oh,
that was
another
Philo going to the opposite field.
Yeah.
I think the morphogenics in Philadelphia are blowing with us tonight. We have six outs to get, but we started the show. I was ready to die, and now I will live another day. At least another inning. Oh, actually, you know what? You know what? You know what?
What?
I have something somewhere. I have to find it now.
I bet you do.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that.
We got him. And out of the inning. Oh, that was luck. That was real luck. He was digging for that with a fork.
I think it was a spork.
A lot of Antos out there just struggling.
Yeah.
Struggling to find their dexterity with the, you know.
With the lizard?
With the lizard, yeah.
Who else would understand that but you?
Well, you know. But I have something here. I'm going to.
Well, you better hurry up. We got a minute.
I'm trying. Here it is.
Jesus.
God! The pressure. Overcome the computer, the timing. All right, here we go. Let's see if it boots up. I found this. I don't know where, but this is what we're looking for here. So we can just get this stupid thing to open up. Probably have to close the show with it the way we're going. What we got next week anyway?
I think it's Kathy Snow. I kind of screwed up my...
It's kind of been all over the place, hasn't it?
Yeah, but I'm going to have our friend check on it for us.
All right, then. Oh. You dog. Play. Just play.
It's not playing, huh?
No, of course not.
Well, why don't you sing it?
No!
You got 57 seconds.
You know what? You know what?
What are you trying to play?
This it?
No.
I'm going to try and find it over here quick.
Well, you better be really quick.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Can't believe it has to be that difficult.
Well, we have 30 seconds left.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
I'm feeling it.
You feeling it?
I'm feeling it.
You feeling the 23 seconds we have left now?
So, let's see. If I open it with that, maybe that'll work.
All right, 10 seconds.
Bastards.
Okay, everybody,
anyway,
have a good week.
Letterman said we did a half inning of no-hit ball, but I'm going to play it for the streamers.
Okay.
And I'm stubborn now.
Go ahead.
We already lost like 5 minutes for me getting bumped up and keep the thing. This is annoying. What else is new? We're up by 3 runs with two innings to go, so I can't complain.
No.
Yes, I can. Of course I can.
No, don't.
What is it doing to me?
I don't know, but it's pissing me off.
There's no sound. Oh, that's why.
Half inning guaranteed shutout baseball, or the tickets are on me.
There you go. Did you hear that?
No.
Happening guaranteed shutout baseball, or the tickets are on me.
One more time.
Happening guaranteed shutout baseball, or the tickets are on me.
There you go. That went on, right?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Right. Oofa at Travel Light. I don't even know if we're still in the air, but it seems like we should be.
No, we're not.
Oh, it's not even 10 o'clock yet.
Well, look, I can only go by what the stupid switchboard is telling me.
All right. Well, if you made it this far, you enjoyed a wide variety of sports tonight here. Viva the Clintons. next week, Republicans and more Soma stuff here on Naked Soma's Eye Contact Radio Hour. For everybody in Philadelphia, travel light.
Bye-bye.